We are live and in color. Yes, yes, yes. This is your host, Champ Franklin, Intimate Discoveries, Unveiling Connections, a podcast redefining the dialogue on intimacy and connection in modern relationships. In a world flooded with fleeting interactions and surface-level engagements, Intimate Discoveries aim to bridge the gap, fostering deeper connections and understanding. Each episode delves into the heart of intimacy, dismantling myths, and unveiling truths about the complex dynamics of relationships. Through engaging discussions with relationship experts, heartfelt real-life stories, and groundbreaking insights, we challenge and expand your perception and closeness and commitment. Whether you're navigating the rocky paths of a struggling relationship, contemplating the complexities of divorce, or seeking to strengthen your bonds in your marriage, Intimate Discoveries offer a compassionate, insightful, and transformative journey into the essence of human connections. I'm your host, Champ Franklin. Let's go. Man, let me tell you something. This is getting ready to be a fire conversation. Boy, I tell you, yep. You all know I bring the truth, I bring the best, and music off. And I tell you this, that I have some exciting, an exciting person that's coming on board today. A really great friend. I think we've known each other at least 10 years. Afghanistan. Yeah, 10 years. Yeah, absolutely. My God, Afghanistan goes back quick. And you know I'm going to have Legacy on and Golden will be on. But I tell you, I have a veteran who's been to war, who's seen love, who's married, have two children, a beautiful son and daughter, and a beautiful person on both the inside and outside, a treasure. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce my good friend, Stephanie. Hey.
Oh, hello, hello.
Oh, my gosh. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Champ? How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. What do you say when the champ come on? What do you say?
Oh my God. 10 years. 10 years.
Yes.
We've known each other for 10 years.
And we connected like it was like we never stopped, right?
I know. Yeah. And you know what? I mean, like, I think what's really great is that we've seen each other through all these different phases, you know, through all these different seasons. I mean, like, you know, I was completely single when went to Afghanistan, you know, I saw, and the next time I saw you, I think, I just met, mm-hmm. Chris, my husband
yes.
now.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you know, so it's, yeah, I mean, it's like you've seen the whole thing.
Yeah, I've seen the whole thing. And I don't know if I told you, I remember when you came down from Sasebo, Sasebo or Ibukuni? Where were you?
Yeah, I was Sasebo.
We came down from Sasebo and I picked you up from the train station or something. And you're like, oh no, I'm going to go check on Chris, right?
Yep.
Oh yeah. I was like, all right, well, go do that. And the rest was history, right?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, that was, I mean, and that really turned out, I mean, that was a big lesson. And I think that from like where, like in past relationships, you know, where I had been to when I, you know, to actually being with Chris, I mean, that was, man, that was a leap. That was a big leap in figuring out relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. But the thing that was phenomenal about you, Stephanie, is that you were a beast.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So we're talking about vulnerability and physical intimacy. That's our topic for today. And so we're going to dive into that at some point, but I'm wanting to sort of give some backstory about the beast, right? About
yeah, Stephanie. Yeah.
And what it took for you to be vulnerable, because you and I, we climbed Mount Fuji together, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We went to the top and you did your little karate stand. And
yep. I went and I held the hiking stick above my head. I did a pistol and I was like, this is mine for today.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my gosh. I remember all of it. I remember it.
So, oh geez. Yeah. And you know what, you know, we were not the ones who had to take a whole, like a whole caravan back down the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
Oh yes, absolutely. So, but it's been great. And so starting off with, like you were saying, it took a leap of faith, as you were, going through the navigating through your relationship, you know, understanding your relationships, right?
Right.
So kind of walk me through that place of vulnerability. And from, I'm talking about the time when you and I, we were in, and we were at my house, I think we were, and you were getting ready to go. We went to the Opama train station. And then you're like, I'm going to see about Chris. What, from that space of vulnerability, how difficult was that for you to go to that level?
It was difficult because I think that in discovering that, I had to, I realized I didn't know a whole lot about myself. I figured out that there wasn't a whole lot that I'm like, there was, you know, like a layer that I hadn't even scratched the surface of myself. But the weird thing is that he was the first one that saw, you know, that saw it, that layer in me. And, you know, and I think that that was definitely like a click where I'm like, oh wow. You know, I'm like, I'm not holding back with this person because he recognized something in me that I didn't even recognize in myself. And you know what? It makes perfect sense. Before, I think, you know, it's maybe not for everybody, but I kind of feel like sometimes you need to have your heart shattered, absolutely shattered to pieces before you find that person that makes it that you mesh with, that, mm-hmm. you know, you rebuild yourself back up with, that you're able to, you know, scar those pieces together. 'Cause I mean, you're never the same after something's broken, but you can either grow back stronger, you know, I mean, it's just kind of like the body. You can go back stronger, you know, you can let yourself heal, you can give yourself time, but you can also push yourself. Or you can, you know, kind of go, you know, in the way of entropy and just kind of, you know, never heal from it. And I think that one of the things that, before I met Chris, I had let myself become so vulnerable with somebody and they knew everything about me, or at least I mean, and that was tough. And I thought to myself, I'm like, man, this hurts. I never want anybody to know this much about me ever again, because you know, it's exhausting. But when one thing that I, that was, you know, with Chris, that really vulnerable moment, he goes and he says, you know, he's like, have you ever, he's, and I don't mean this in any kind of way or anything like that, he says, but do you think that you maybe have anxiety? And mm-hmm. I was like, huh? I'm not saying, don't take this wrong, me if I'm completely off base. He's let me know. He's like, but, and you know, he's like, he told me about, like, you know, history of just, you know, like idiopathic, you know, completely out of nowhere rashes, you know, allergy testing, all that kind of stuff. He's like, told me about this, and this. And I'm like, wow. I thought, I'm not able to mask that from this person. And you know what? I never even asked that question of myself. And, you know, here he is, and he's asking the hard question, but he's also saying, hey, you know, that's okay. Let me help you. Hey, that's okay. You know what? If you want my help, I'm going to help you. If you don't want my help, that's okay. He says, but, you know, either way I'm here, and, you know, there's no time lapse on that. You know, there's no expiration date on that. And, you know, that I thought, you know, when somebody kind of knows something about you or figures something about you that you don't even recognize in yourself, I mean, that right there, I thought, wow, this is, you know, all the layers are peeled off, and this is, yeah, this is a very, very, you know, intimate thing. And this is, it's uncomfortable. It's incredibly uncomfortable, but you have to lean into it, you know?
Right. Your father was in the military too, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's a military. He spent, he's an academy grad. So he graduated in 80, and that was the first class that I think that was the first class that they let women in. Mm-hmm. And he retired in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah. And so as you were talking about masking that anxiety, you did it really well. So you did it really well. And because, like I say, for me, it was, we were in Afghanistan and you're crushing. What was it? You climbed the rope to the top, hit the bell. I couldn't do that. The ammo cans running. I'm like, oh my gosh, Steph is a beast.
And you know what? And that right there, you know, I mean, that was like one of the biggest things where I felt like I connected, you know, with somebody on that level where I'm like, okay, it's like, I need to be pushed. I need someone to push me. And it's like, I just, you know, and the other thing is, I mean, everybody's different. Everybody's completely different. But, you know, for me, like one of the best ways that I can continually wear that mask of ease of everything's fine, everything's good, is just going full on beast mode. I don't know what it is, but it's like, okay, let's calm myself down by doing a couple of ammo can lifts and let's climb that rope. And you know what? I'm going to put 80 pounds over my head.
Right. Yeah, you did that thing. And I guess it was amazing seeing you, Lonnie, Kulo, and all the other women.
Oh, man.
Who were in Afghanistan. And
total badass women right there. Oof.
Absolutely. And what remember, were part of the Kandahar hashing, you know, were we the Kandahar hares?
Yeah. Oh man, that was, you know, and it's, you know, finding those joys, you know, those things to kind of let all that out in a war zone, you know, you're like, man, I'm really lucky. It's like, I can, you know, you can put yourself out there and try to just try something new all the time, or you can start to kind of wither in there, you know? And I mean, and sometimes I guess maybe sometimes, I mean, it's a give and take, because you can put yourself out there and you can, you know, meet a lot of people, do a lot of, you know, join a lot of different organizations wherever you are. But then sometimes, you know, you realize you just kind of end up keeping people at an arm's length, at an arm's distance. And you don't even realize that you're doing that. But then, you know, it took that big leap of faith with Chris, you know, kind of like Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, when, you know, he's at that big chasm and he's like, you know, like, and he just takes that big step, you know, and you think he's going to fall, but he just takes that step and bam, because he had faith, you know, you got to put your faith in that person. And yeah, it's scary, because guess what? There's a chance that you can't fall. I mean, shoot, I've done that before, you know, take a leap of faith with a person and bam, you're flat on your face. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then, yeah.
So that's what I was. And at the time that you and I, we were in Afghanistan, you're a commissioned officer, you're an occupational therapist. What else were you doing in Afghanistan and in the military?
So, you know, in Afghanistan, one thing that I kind of did was so occupational therapy, it's not really that, you know, not that well known of a career, of an occupation. People definitely know physical therapy and speech therapy, but occupational therapy, it's a little bit of a misnomer. But I decided, you know, April is occupational therapy month. So I went and I, um, I contacted a couple of people and they said, hey, you know what, why don't you do like a, like, let's do, I said, hey, let's do an OT month. And then somebody says, hey, you know what, you could probably get like AFN or something like that to like do an interview or something like that. And, they did, which, and it was really interesting because I mean, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, it's AFN, like doesn't, you know, it's just such a small little community, you know, military, but right. Realizing I'm like, oh wow, this went over to Europe. But, and so I did that. Really glad I did it kind of, and I did like a couple little presentations around because mm-hmm. I mean, when, you know, very, very thankfully and very fortunate when op tempo was low, you know, you gave yourself little projects to do, and mm-hmm. that was really good. So, you know, trying to, get really, really into my profession, create awareness about what we do, mm-hmm. about what the Warrior Recovery Center did for everybody over there. And then also just, you know, trying to keep, you know, keeping your mind, keeping your body strong while you're there. Cause I mean, it can get very, very heavy. Like it gets really heavy. And, you know, I think that there were definitely like two, I mean, there are a lot of heavy moments, but I mean, you know, there's always a couple where it's just, you know, you realize where it kind of, you know, it can level you, you know, there are some very heavy moments that can level you, and you have to lean back on either the people that you met there, got close with, mm-hmm. those projects that you give yourself, and, you know, just, you know, kind of that drive. And, but yeah, I think I was, you know, and I was also kind of at a turning point as to figuring out, you know, which way in my career did I want to go? I mean, mm-hmm. And I realized that at that point, I really wanted to pursue, a specialization as a certified hand therapist.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's good. It definitely opened up, you know, opened up my eyes. And it also just let me know that, there are a lot of people out there who are just very, very genuine, very, very sincere people, people that, you know, are going to be in your life for forever. And then mm-hmm. there are others where it seems like, you know, it seems like there is just, you know, a very, very, very big bond. Mm-hmm. but then at the end of the day, you unfortunately realize that for some people, you know, other people are just, you know, disposable. And that's kind of sad because I think that at some point, if you look at other human beings as just being disposable, I mean, is that person ever really going to know any type of intimacy? I mean, maybe that's not important to them. I mean, not everybody, you know, holds that as important, but, mm-hmm. You know, I think that a part of real intimacy is realizing that every single person has value. Every single person is going to put, well, hopefully everybody's going to put stock into you, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a give and take, and you, whatever they put into you, you have to recognize and figure out, you know what, I really appreciate that. And I'm going to go ahead and put that same stock into you, or I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to recognize it, at least recognize it, you know?
Right. So, so I was going somewhere because as we were talking about you and I, you know, first meeting in Afghanistan and you being this tough warrior commissioned officer, you have everything going for yourself. Right. And then at this time, you're still masking this anxiety. Right.
Yep.
And no one, I didn't know you, cause you were just, you were just an executor, a deliverer, and you did great stuff. But you also had this calm, sweet demeanor about yourself that you can go at any moment, you know, you can flip back and forth, which was really cool too. And then you meet Chris, and the moment of vulnerability is right there before you. And you talk about the courage it took you to be vulnerable, and how has that moment, seizing that moment of vulnerability, how has that transformed your life and your relationship to now where you know you have a beautiful son and daughter, and you all have been married, you know, and so talk to me.
So, you know, that that really was, it was such a, I mean, obviously a key moment, because you never know what life is going to put forth in your way. And that vulnerability, it was such a big, I mean, it was everything. And in a way, it's almost like an extra defense shield. 'Cause I'm like, okay, I've got this, and you know, we're going with it. Because, you know, as we were getting married, we're very just kind of low key people. Mm-hmm. And we were like, okay, we're planning this wedding and everything like that. We're doing this and we're having fun, and it's going to be low key, and we're going to do it the way we want to do it. We want our personalities to be, you know, represented in this ceremony. Well, we didn't, I was raised Catholic, and my dad is he's a very staunch Catholic. He's, you know, just very, he's a very by the book kind of guy. And I said, you know, we're going to have we're going to have Chris's chaplain, 'cause he got really close with his chaps while he was deployed. Mm-hmm. He's like, mm-hmm. I want him to marry us, and we're going to get married outside at a winery. And these are the elements that we want to have in it. We want to write our own vows. You can't do that in a Catholic ceremony. Mm-hmm. And so my dad, he was like, he told me, he was like, I'm not going. And, he refused to go. And of course, that's devastating, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, they tried to get him to go. My sister, my mom, you know, my grandmother spoke to him, but he was like, nope. He was like, you know, if it's not in a church, he's like, you know, I'm not going. And, you know, my first impression on those things is that it's like, you know what, I'm not gonna let anybody know that it bothers me. I'm not gonna, mm-hmm. you know, that's it. But I mean, for something like that, I mean, you know, there is no choice. I mean, it's a very big heartbreak. You know, it's just, it's one of those things where you realize, you know, you want your family there to support you and to celebrate, mm-hmm. and the best day of your life, the thing that's gonna start, you know, the thing that's going to create those two beautiful babies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I let myself fall apart. And, but, you know, I couldn't fall apart because Chris was right there. I mean, yeah. you can't fall apart when somebody is just already there, you know, with their safety net, you know, saying, hey, listen, you know, I'm here for you. Okay. Yeah. He says, you know, whatever you want to do, whatever feels right for you, he says, we'll do it. He says, but you know, I'm here for you. And there was, you know, there was as much where I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like, I feel like I'm falling apart. You know, I'm really upset. I'm really disappointed. This is very heartbreaking. It was just it, you know, the drop, you know, that crash, it just doesn't happen because, you know, he's there. And just that undying, unwavering support. And I mean, you know, and also, I mean, big moments like where you realize how connected you are with somebody. Because so a month after we got married, I got sent overseas to Vietnam to do Pacific Partnership. And that was an amazing humanitarian mission. And he got deployed. He was with 3-5 Marines in mm-hmm. Pendleton. So mm-hmm. he was out there, and they were, I think one of them was the Bonhomme Richard. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. The other one.
Bonhomme Richard. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. out of Sasebo.
Yeah. And he was, so one of the things that, happened was, right as they pulled out of Australia, his brother had, messaged me, and he let me know that their grandfather had passed away. So we were trying to figure out, okay, they just pulled out, they just got underway, like let's send a Red Cross message or something. And then, while we were trying to, I'm like, okay, wonder when he's going to have comms again. Then there was news that there was, an Osprey crash on one of the ships, and it was the ship that Chris was on. Mm-hmm. So, and I was like, oh man. And I know I didn't, I was like, okay. I was like, let's see as turns out. And it was bad. It was a very bad crash. They ended up losing three people. And, I thought, oh my gosh. So I do know that Newt word got to him just before the crash had happened. Mm-hmm. And you know, that his family was trying to see if, you know, maybe there's some way he could fly out for the funeral. His family was unaware of that crash happening because it wasn't everywhere yet.
Right.
And after that crash happened, I didn't hear not one word from him. But knowing what I know, I mean, growing up a Navy brat, you realize that no news is good news. If there is a disaster and you have not heard anything about or from your loved one, that's actually good news, because you will be notified just as soon as possible. So no news is always good news. And I thought, okay, well, let's hope for radio silence. Let's hope for radio silence until things calm down, and let's go. So, I flew over to Chicago to go to his grandfather's funeral and to, because his father's a D-Day veteran, mm-hmm. and to go give the four count salute and just to pay my respects. His family had no idea that there was what was going on. So, mm-hmm. It's kind of like trying to look for updates and, you know, trying to keep it cool, keep it calm and everything like that. And then finally heard from him and just, you know, it was a big relief. But at the same time, there's just almost like a, when you feel like you're so connected to somebody, and sometimes it can be a family member, it could be your mm-hmm. best friend that you've known from kindergarten. There's just something that, you know, you feel, it's like, no, you know what? I still feel like they're with me. They're okay. You know, they're, mm-hmm.
right.
You know, I know that they're still here. You know, I'm hoping that they are as safe as can be, but no, they're here, you know, and it's almost like that light that you mm-hmm. feel you have, you know, a connection with somebody. It's like, okay, that light hasn't gone out. You know, we're still fine. We're good. And, you know, and I think that just that, kind of thinking to yourself, like, all right, you know, what's, you know, and like, as you know, again, that kind of like that Navy brat training, you know, and then kind of figuring out that, oh geez, I guess now I'm a Navy wife now, is that, mm-hmm. you know, if there's a disaster, you know, you have to just, again, have that leap of faith. And, you know, what are they supposed to be doing at that moment? They're either supposed to be helping. Okay. If they're unable to help, well, guess what? That means that everybody else around them is helping that person, is helping your person. So mm-hmm. you have to have faith in your organization, you know, in his organization, and you just have to, you know, keep it going. But I think that it was probably, you know, that big moment of not knowing what's happening, that big moment of, oh geez, is he okay? You know, this person that, you know, I've come to let be my lifeline, and that, mm-hmm. you know, I just, you know, I can't imagine experiencing anything good without this person, you know, mm-hmm. what's going to happen. But, it's, you know, I think that probably just the fact that he did help me, seek help and, you know, get treated for anxiety, was that I was able to say, okay, let's just get through this. Let's work through this. You know, we'll put the disaster hat on if we need it. But right now we're staying mm-hmm. one step at a time.
Right. So when we talk about that, about Chris being there for you, for your marriage, for the wedding, mm-hmm. and saying, I'm here with you, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. Whatever you want to do, in this moment, I'm going with you. And that brought a level of closeness, with you and Chris. And how has that, how was that, those, that safety and that commitment to helping you to feel safe, and that the how you were feeling was right, and that you can come and talk to him, how deeper did that transcend you all's relationship?
I think it was, I think that that was like a, you know, I mean, when you kind of think about a wedding and when, you know, your family, you know, gives each, you know, the, you know, their mom gives their son away, you know, or, you know, the dad gives their daughter away, you know, you're, you mm-hmm. know, as some point or another, you know, that you're going to have to, you know, surrender your child to whoever, mm-hmm. whoever they fall in love with. And I kind of feel like that right there was, you know, it was just like, okay, you know what? You know, my family definitely is my family. They'll always be my family. But, this is I don't want to say it's like an end point or like a severing of a ties or anything, you know, definitely mm-hmm. not like that, but it was definitely cemented that, all right, you know, my family has their ideas, their views, and, you know, their things on what they think I should do, their expectations of me. Mm-hmm. But, ultimately I'm going to be Chris's wife. I'm going to be, you know, his partner, and I'm going to respect our wishes. I'm going to respect his wishes, and mm-hmm. I'm going to choose to put his needs, above my parents' needs. You know, in some points or another, you know, not saying that it's like, you know, okay, you know, my parents, you know, they don't, I'm not thinking about their needs or anything like that. But, you know, when it comes to us as a unit, it's me and him, you know.
Right.
My parents are not and should not be in this marriage. They shouldn't be, you know, a third voice, or, you know, they shouldn't be the, you know, the backseat drivers of my marriage or anything like that. And, I've really learned that, because if you allow that, if you allow a third entity in your marriage, that really disrupts the intimacy. I mean, not just, you know, in a very obvious way, but I mean, because right. then it's, I mean, like you, because I feel like he and I have to be, we absolutely have to be, one unit, you know, right. not splintered, not trying to appease anybody. We have to be us. And, you know, and I mean, I think that, you know, he, as his wife, you know, I should hope that, you know, he's respectful of my wishes. He takes into account of, you know, what I will say is, okay, this is what's important to me. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately as my husband, I'm like, hey, you know, this is, you know, as much as he trusts me to, you know, take care of my kids while he's, you know, away at work, as much as mm-hmm. I trust him to, you know, be safe and to, you know, take care of the kids when, you know, on days that I'm working, stuff like that. We just have to trust that, you know, we are each other's unit. And I think that that whole situation with getting married and saying, okay, you know what? Nope. I'm breaking the good obedient daughter role right here. I am this person's wife. This is how it is.
Right. And that again, that's another courageous moment. And I applaud you for that, because, if you give in to your dad, right,
mm-hmm.
Who is not there with you right now, he's yeah. not there when you had the baby. He wasn't mm-hmm. there when, you know, doing your daughter's first steps, and up in the middle of the night when your newborn is crying and stuff like that. He's not putting in the work for those things. But I gave him this vote in our lives that really hindered or really splintered or our foundation, right? That was, he put a crack in our foundation, which we were not, it didn't have to be that way.
Right.
But you protected the sanctity of your commitment. And so in Intimate Discoveries, and I, you know, I told you that I'm divorced now, and I know it was a shocker, right? I told you today, right? And what were you like? What was your response?
I was like, oh shit. I was like, oh shit, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Yeah, I know, right? So the thing is that learning about that safe space, right? Just because as mm-hmm. I look back in my marriage, I didn't have a safe space. And I also dealt with anxiety and depression and stuff like that, that I didn't know that I needed to be medicated. So having that vulnerable space. And so what I do now is I have this definition that we work on, that we use with intimate discoveries, and how we define intimacy is that it's a level of commitment, positive, affective, cognitive, and physical closeness that one experiences with a partner in a reciprocal relationship. And now there are four variations to intimacy, which is cognitive, which is just exchanging thoughts one with another, like you and I are doing, again, in a reciprocal relationship. And then there's emotional intimacy, which is sharing thoughts and feelings, and which is rooted in deeply rooted in self-disclosure. And then there's sexual intimacy, which is choosing to share one's body in the form of affection and sexual activities and things of that nature. And then there's spiritual intimacy, which is sharing thoughts about religion and morality, right? So the point that I like about that is that I align that with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and I put the cognitive and spiritual intimacy down at the bottom level with the physiological and the safety needs, right? And then the emotional intimacy is where the feeling of loving and belonging is, right? And then at the top of that is the sexual intimacy. And so as we look at the transgression, I mean, progress of your relationship, where we started at the vulnerability side and you all felt safe, right? You felt safe talking to him about your anxiety. And then we get to the wedding, the marriage, where we're getting ready to consecrate our marriage. And then there is a level of closeness that you and Chris establish, right? Yeah. That we're together, right? We're one, right? And so now we have this level of closeness. We have this emotional intimacy. And now it comes to the point where we now talk about how we connect the vulnerability and the physical intimacy, because we know that on the wedding night, physical intimacy, right?
Yeah. So, you'd hope so.
you hope so. And you're absolutely right. You hope so. Because a lot of stuff goes on the night before, right? And on the day of the wedding, a lot goes on. And so most times amen. I am vulnerable on and transparent. So I was tired on my wedding night. I went to sleep. I'm like, man, I was up like the night before getting the limousine, getting the car and stuff together, figuring out where my family's going to be. Then get up at, wedding was at 11 o'clock on time. And then we got a party, da, da, da. And I'm going to bed. But the point that we're looking at is that because you all are really solidified that cognitive, emotional intimacy, that vulnerability, how, again, going back to that question, how has that played a part in the connection, the physical intimacy now, since you all have that deep connection and that vulnerability there?
Well, so that's a really, really good question, because I feel like now I wouldn't put it as like I don't think that we're at like a revolution yet with like women, like with women's health and stuff like that, as it relates to like especially after you have babies and stuff like that. But it's still really nuanced, but we're learning more and more about it. And and the thing is that, we just, now I really am thankful that our generation, we're a bunch of blabbermouths. We will tell people our experiences, which is good, because nobody talked about, back when our parents were kids, when my grandparents were growing up and stuff, nobody talked about how many miscarriages they had. Nobody talked about how it's more common than you think. Nobody talks about, like what what you go through, you know, immediately after you have the baby. Nobody talks about all the nitty gritty, you know, the stuff that doesn't, you know, that doesn't involve pink and blue bows and stuff. So, so when I had Theo, I mean, easy pregnancy, it was great and everything like that. And, he was born a month before the lockdowns, which was another thing. But I had, and I was looking forward. I was so excited to breastfeed, very, very excited. And, I had a hard time with it. I was under producing, which, you know, it's just, that's a, with all the other different emotions and hormones going on, under producing, I just felt like I thought I'm failing my son. And it's like, I'm failing my family. I can't, you know. And then it's like, you know, supplement with formula. And I mean, and I knew going into that, I mean, hey, look, it doesn't matter how you feed your baby, as long as your baby is fed, you know, who cares if it's formula. But for some reason, it's just, it's something that you almost can't even, you can't fight that feeling of, I should be able to do this easily. But the other interesting thing, and I had never, ever heard of this, and I didn't learn what it was until maybe a year after I had Theo, but breastfeeding, and actually more so pumping, was, it was difficult because there's a thing called dysphoric milk ejection reflex. Mm-hmm. And it's, I never heard of it. And there's, I've brought it up to a couple of different OBs. And then, it's just this thing, this phenomenon that happens is, when you have a, like when a woman has a letdown, when you're pumping or you're feeding, baby latches and mm-hmm. you let down that milk, you get a sudden and very, very intense feeling of, sometimes it's depression, sometimes it's hopelessness. For me, it was this feeling of like, it was like a feeling of like violation, or mm-hmm. just it brought back some very, very, very unwanted feelings and just things like that. And I just, you know, and it was just, I couldn't, I mean, kind of felt like I just wanted to crawl out of my skin. And it just, I mean, kind of like you even just kind of wanted to just, you know, just rip yourself apart just for a moment, for just to kind of get away from that feeling. And it stops, you know, eventually. I mean, it does stop. And I just thought, okay, I don't know, I'm a weirdo, what, you know, whatever this is. Mm-hmm. But Chris saw that I was struggling with this. Like I was really, mm-hmm. really just, and he's like, hey, look, he says, we need to, you know, put a timeline. He says, on, okay, we're going to give this a shot. He says, and then that's it. But, it really affected us. I mean, intimately, because, anytime, you know, after that, I was, you know, trying to get intimate, it's just all those feelings kind of rush back again. And, you know, I just, again, I thought, I don't know what the hell's going on. You know, like I don't know if I'm the only one that's ever experienced something like this or what, but then a friend had told me, she's like, I know what's going on. And then, and I went and I told Chris about it, and he was like, oh, so, and then he started reading up on it. And, mm-hmm. you know, just the fact that, I mean, he listened, he recognized it, and he's like, oh, wow. He's like, this is you. And working with me in that regard, you know, to not, you know, say, oh, well, you know, this is ridiculous. Or, I've had, you know, some friends where I'm like, oh, geez, if my husband ever talked to me that way, good Lord. Okay. I mean, right. But yeah, I mean, in that, just, you know, having that connection, having just being able to trust and have that much faith and say, hey, look, this is something that I'm experiencing, that I'm going through, and I know that it's affecting you, and mm-hmm. I'm really sorry, but, you know, and, we're able to, you know, able to work through it. It's just, you know, it was really good. And the thing is, I mean, we were very well prepared for the second baby and, you know, to kind of go through that. And then also just saying, oh, it's like, okay, you know, what should we do about, you know, my medication? And, you know, he's like, hey, I just, you know, do you think we should maybe, you know, go back on, you know, one of your medications 6 weeks before the baby comes, you know, just so that we can, you know, it can help out with some of the postpartum anxiety, depression, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And so, and that's good that you all have that foundation of vulnerability and that safe space in your relationship, it's important. And, I applaud Chris. I applaud you for being, hold on, let me do this here real quick. I got to make sure I bring some, if I'm on applaud, I'm on a,
right? That's right.
Yeah, we got to give you some flowers right here because it's tough. It takes courage and a strong woman. I'll say strong. I want to say strong. It's my fierce, right? Because you were fierce, right? And for you to be able to take off your armor and to be vulnerable, and Chris be there to provide that safe space to you is in my mind is like textbook of what I've been talking about. As I look back on my marriage, that safe space, it wasn't there, right? I wasn't taught how to provide a safe space. I didn't feel like she gave me a safe space. And so when there were times in which I felt she was wrong, I let her be on all by herself, right? That's your stuff, right? And vice versa. And so I just think that it's really, really important, because now that you all have this this relationship where you all are committed to being vulnerable, allowing each other to share their thoughts in a non-judgmental environment, and continue to look for reasons to agree, right? How is that? Do you understand what I'm saying when I say look for a reason to agree?
Right, because I mean, because you have to put your pride away. You have to really shove it away, because the ultimate goal here, I mean, like, if you kind of look at it, I mean, you're looking to stay in it. You're looking to, you know, to stay together. And it's like, we have to figure out a reason why we want to come to a common ground. And, you know, if it's, and I feel like where it's like, well, I've actually heard somebody say, like, well, they have to know that I'm right. I thought to myself, and it was a very subjective thing that they were talking about. I forgot what it was, but I thought, well, why is it important to be right? And I'm like, why is it important that they have to know? You know, it's like, because right now this sounds like a you problem, you know?
Right.
So, you know, like finding, you know, why should you agree? Because you have to always remember, like, we have to be on the same team. You know, we have to want the same things. And right now, like in our phase, in our phase of life right now, you know, we're thinking about kids. We're thinking about setting up, you know, a good foundation for them, you know, when they're starting school, when they're done with school, and, you know, all that good stuff. And, you know, we want them to be good people. You know, I mean, the last thing anybody wants to do is, you know, oh my God, 20 years later, and here I'm watching Dateline, and, you know, oh, that's my son as a subject line. but yeah, so, you know, I just think to myself, I'm like, all right, look, the goal is that we're keeping this family, we're keeping this marriage together. But, and then the other thing is that we have to figure out how to, we also want to be on the same team and, you know, to work together, because, And I kind of feel like this is something that I've seen a lot of, like a lot of my parents' friends go through, is that, you know, when those kids are out of the nest, I mean, you have to like each other again, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah, you got to figure out how to be empty nesters.
Right. But so one of the things that I did when I was in Okinawa, Japan, is that I did some soul searching, because it had gotten really bad, right? Because she had gone off with her relationship, and having this relationship. And so what I did was I started looking at numbers. And so if we disagreed twice a month over a 20-year period, that's 480 times that we've disagreed. Right. And because it's, you know, 24 times in a year. Right. 240, 480. And so by the time we're empty nesting, it's 20 years after that. How many times did she win? Or how many times did I win? And now all of that resentment of those moments in which you disagree with me, or I disagree with you, are now being paid forward now. But here's the real thing is that all of the things that you all disagree over the last 20 years is not even in your life right now. Right. But that pain is there, that resentment of I lost, I'm down, you know, 400 because 80, you know, you only let me win 80 times, right?
Yeah.
Right. And those moments that you could have just said, hey, that's your stuff and you're okay, I like it, and found a way to like it instead of finding a way to disagree with it, right? And so we got two, like say, Golden is on. She's a psychologist and therapist, and she highlighted that you had mentioned two important vulnerable factors, which is self-evaluation and safety net, having those points, which allow each, which contributes to your vulnerability and his commitment to helping you to feel secure. Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, I think that maybe that's probably one of the hardest things about intimacy is that self-evaluation. I mean, cause you know, you've written a fit rep before, you know, we know how to make ourselves, you know, fart sunshine and piss excellence, you know, but you know, let's take a deep dive into this. And I mean, what are some good things that I bring to a table? You know, when we say it's like, you know, you are like, everybody is worth loving. We should all love ourselves and we need to respect ourselves. But then the really hard part is that, I mean, yeah, being vulnerable with yourself and saying what are some things that I know is going to be, that could be, or will be challenging to this person that I would like to be my partner. And also how can I be a partner for them? You know, what do I think? I mean, how can I be a safety net to this person? And those are really hard things to do. Being honest with yourself is, that's tough. It's really tough.
You're right. And it is tough, especially when you know that you should be doing that, right? I grew up on the west side of Chicago. I grew up in a drug house. My dad was shot when I was in sixth grade. He decided to sell drugs after becoming a quadriplegic. And so I'm in the seventh grade bag, you know, doing everything for my dad, washing him up, feeding him, shaving him, giving, you know, brushing his teeth, all of his other care and health care. That's how I ended up in the health care, you know, because I started taking my dad and feeding him heroin, cocaine, and all those other, you know, whatever he needed. And so knowing that part of being vulnerable, was escaped me. I didn't know that I,
needed, you know, that vulnerability was important, because it was forbidden for you to show any weakness. And so to have about 30 years of my life where it was forbidden for me to share those feelings and emotions, that going down deep that you talked about, that introspection part, I didn't know that I could go down there and find it, right? And yeah, so
no, I mean, and you're right. No, well, I think that also, I kind of feel like, in a lot of cultures, and I think that maybe hopefully, like as Americans, we're maybe opening up our eyes to this, but I feel like we can be really tough on men, on our men, when it comes to letting them be vulnerable. I mean, and right now I kind of feel like, you know, there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of talk about being kind. There's a lot of talk about vulnerability, but I feel like men really get the short end of the stick because we have to understand, we have to know that, men are human. Men are really human. And just like with women, in a very, very different capacity, there's a lot that men carry on their shoulders. I mean, women carry a lot on their shoulders too. And then also definitely in, my family, my heritage, they're Mexican, and there is no vulnerability, you know, in for men. It's still very machismo. That's something that, you know, it affects a lot of relationships, but I feel like we have to allow, you know, our men, and we sometimes just have to say, hey, look, it's, you know, you can be vulnerable, you know, just, you know, show it to me, or you know, just say, okay, you know what, I'm going to work with you, and we're going to go ahead and let it out bit by bit, whatever you're comfortable with. But, you know, I think that men are, I feel like we need to really, really show up for our men in the relationship, because, you know, I mean, women are strong, you know, we can be very, very strong. And I think that we need to really be that strong pillar, you know, for our men. So that way, you know, that vulnerability can go both ways. We have to open up that channel.
And how, what ways can someone open up that channel of vulnerability with a man?
You know, I think, I don't know, you know, what that best way, mm-hmm. to, but well, you know what, maybe finding out, cause like finding out what somebody's love language is. Okay. What is it that person feels, what is it that you do that makes them feel loved? What is it that, you know, they can do for you? Because, you know, we've heard it all the time where it's like, oh, it's like, you know, I do all this housework, or I buy my wife gifts and she's never satisfied, this, that, and the other. And it's like, oh, well, you know, it's like, she's, she likes quality time. You know, it's like, she doesn't, you know, she doesn't want gifts. Like, she just wants your time, or she likes physical touch. You know, she's more physically, that's how you show it, you know. Or, and also say, it's like, well, okay. It's like, how do you, what is it that I can do? Okay. How is it that I can show, you know, love? How is it, how do you receive love best? And I think that, you know, maybe understanding that can be really, really important, because you know, where, I mean, I think that is like a lot of women, you know, it's like, oh, they want to be the cool girl. You know, it's not the one that doesn't text all the time. The one that doesn't say, hey, this bothers me, I feel disrespected when X, Y, and Z. But so yeah, figuring out, okay, what is it that makes you feel loved? What is it that makes you feel disrespected? And maybe that's a step in the right direction as to, we can say,
right,
you know, it's okay to show me these things. And, right, you know, I want to learn that about you, because, you know, I think that hopefully what everybody will learn is that, I love your trauma, you know, as much as I love you, because you know, as sad and as horrible as it is, you know, that's what made you, you know, the person that I fell in love with. And, you know, it doesn't mean that trauma always has to be, you know, relived and relived. You know, maybe hopefully your partner can help you heal from that trauma, but it just takes, you know, opening that gate and both of you recognizing that, that trauma, as ugly as it can be, if you move past it somehow, just, you know, in some way, shape or form, there can be something beautiful that grows out of that trauma if you let that person, you know, grow with you, love right. with you, you know, and support you.
So I agree.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
I honestly agree with that statement. That is so true, because so many people actually do not know how to show their true selves and do not feel comfortable with showing them their true selves. And I've always believed that trust equals vulnerability, and vulnerability equals intimacy. And the combination of the two, it deepens a couple's bond and allows them to be close and to feel the trust. And sometimes, as you said earlier, it's not so easy to talk about those things, your fears, your past, your hurt. And so when someone feels that they can trust the other partner, and you show them that they can trust you, and you ask them, you know, your pain is my pain, and your fears is my fears. So you tend to let yourself go, and hopefully that will lead the other person into opening up and talking about their past, and acknowledge their fears, and you can work through it. It sounds like you have a phenomenal marriage and a great relationship.
I am very, very lucky. Just really, really blessed.
Yeah, it sounds like it. To have a very strong partner to allow you to have that safety net. And that is so important. And the great thing about it is that you understand yourself and your partner understands you, and you understand your partner. So it sounds like you guys have created a wonderful family unit that you should really be proud of.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And the other part that I want to highlight also is that you are a strong partner as well, Stephanie. Because when he was out to sea and his grandfather passed away, you showed up for him in moments that he couldn't be there, right? And that is the reciprocity that that can get missed because he is a great guy. He does all this stuff for me, and he's there for me. But are you there for him at the same capacity in which he needs you, right?
Right.
And that creates that beautiful bond that will go on forever. And we are very appreciative, you know, that to have you on the show today to share this because it is beautiful. Go ahead, Steph.
It is. And, you know, I just, it is. And, you know, I love talking about Chris. I love talking about my husband because where he really is just a very calm, even, you know, yet focused person. But, and the thing is that he just has the ability to make people feel very at ease and just really lighten a mood. But he's so sincere. He's a very, very sincere person. And, you know, I see a lot of those attributes, you know, in my kids. We kind of joke because, my son, he's four, and he can do like, he can do these 75 piece puzzles, you know, on his own, and he can just spend like over an hour trying to, you know, put a puzzle together, which is, you know, pretty amazing. And we joke that it's like, that's definitely, you know, that's definitely Chris right there. You know, he, my son looks more like me, but he has a little bit more Chris's focus. Now, my daughter, she looks exactly like my husband, when he was her age. But she's spicy. She's really stubborn.
Oh my gosh. This is beautiful. Yeah, that's great. What do you have any questions there? Golden, do you have anything
else? I'm just enjoying actually listening to Stephanie and hearing about, you know, her marriage and how they allow each other to just be themselves and talk about so much and your communication with your spouse appears to be very strong. And that's so important, because I have had a lot of people tell me that they really don't communicate. They don't feel comfortable talking about certain things with their partner. And which is really disheartening, because that is the core of your relationship, is communication. You don't have that. So I'm just enjoying listening to Stephanie. I do have a question. How long have you been married?
Oh, let's see. 7 years.
7 years. Okay. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Congratulations.
One of the things you said, go ahead. Are you going to say something, Stephanie?
Oh, no.
Okay. So one of the things that you said is that leading, you have to, when you don't know how to help your partner to be, you know, how to provide that safe space for them to be vulnerable, to share stuff with you, that you lead with love, right? And follow with understanding. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, when you, because you said learning their love language. And because oftentimes we're not looking to understand a person's love language, because I've done all of this stuff, right? And you're not appreciating me doing all of these things, which I thought I was doing the right thing, because they told me, bring you flowers, give you gifts and so forth and so on, shower you with diamonds and stuff like that. And I did all that stuff and I'm not getting the results, right? Mm-hmm. But when you lead with love, right, to understand that person's love language, how impactful is that?
I think it's everything, you know, and I really like how you described that when you said lead with love, follow with understanding. Because evaluating yourself, how do I, you know, receive love? It's like, and also, wait, how am I showing this person that I love them? So it's, and I think that like having that conversation where it's like, I mean, if there's, I mean, we don't really open up these conversations until, I mean, unfortunately, until there's strife. But, you know, I think that that's a good thing to lead on, or like one of those things that you can check in on your partner, just, you know, like one time a week, where it's like, hey, you know, like, how are you feeling? How are you doing? And then just, it's like, hey, you know what? I really feel like I'm showing you that I care about you by, you know, doing this, by, you know, this is how I'm trying to show you that I love you, I care about you, I value you. You know, do you feel like you're receiving that from, or do you feel like that's what you need from me? And again, hard questions to ask, hard conversations to have. It's actually kind of a hard question to answer, because it's like, who doesn't value all of those different love languages? I mean, Everybody values time. Everybody values physical touch. But then also, I really think that love languages can change over time. I mean, kind of like after having a baby, where it's like, okay, I'm not in a space right now that I want a lot of physical touch. Right now, I just need someone to be next to me, or I need someone to maybe talk to me, maybe help me get my mind off of the heavier things in life. Or, mm-hmm. It's just, and I think that understanding that your language can change. Just like in regular life, being bilingual, understanding multiple languages and being fluent in multiple languages is a wonderful thing. Same thing with your love languages, you know?
Absolutely. I agree. I agree with it. And I appreciate you sharing that. It does go back to that safe space. However, the challenges that I see is that the pre-judgmental events, right? Where if I'm doing these things and I don't feel like you appreciate them, then I become judgmental towards you. And then that sort of closes the door on me being vulnerable because you prejudge me. And now you think I'm a horrible person, so I'm not going to really tell you my true self, right?
Yeah, and I think you said you were saying something earlier where, when you hold resentment against your partner, you realize, okay, things are 80-20. You only let me be right 20% of the time. I mean, the three horsemen that kind of just will, level a marriage, where it's like if you hold resentment, mm-hmm. contempt, and stonewalling, I forget what they are, but because then if it's like, well, I feel like I'm doing all these things for you, this is how I'm expressing my love for you, and this is how I'm showing you that I love, and you don't, you're not reciprocating, or you're prejudging me. And I feel like that, like you said, it shuts off that fountain of vulnerability for you to, share and give that piece of humanity in you. But then it also can set you up for feeling resentment. And that is a really, really poisonous thing in a marriage, in any relationship. I mean, even if it's, parent, child, or best friend, or, that resentment can really just, be, the beginning of an end.
Right. And as you're talking, go ahead, Golden.
Oh, I was just going to add that you're talking about resentment. It can be a dangerous thing in a relationship, and it can also be very traumatic. And so couples have to find out that's when that deep commitment of sharing and exploring of how each other is doing, it's called check-ins. And when you check in with each other, and some people have to check in daily, and some people don't require check-ins, but when you just in the middle of the day, I know when I was married to my late husband, and it was funny, and I was home with the kids, and he would call me sometimes in the middle of the day and just say, "How's it going?" And for me, that went a long way, because it made me feel like he cared. He was thinking about me, and he knew, I was home with these kids and they were driving me crazy, and I'm in carpool lines and I'm doing everything from cleaning to XXY to ABC and all over the place. So just having someone to just give you that comfort of reassurance and to let you know that they care and they love you and they want to know how you're feeling. Because when you come home with a new baby, and Stephanie, you can relate to this, it's not easy. because your body is changing. You have this newborn, you have so much going on, and you can't really explain it because your hormones and your pheromones, everything is just raging. And you could probably, and sometimes you have, I had a colicky baby. So things are going on with the baby, things are going on with me, and things are just going on in life. So you have all of these things happening. And if you don't have a partner that say, hey, you know, I'm noticing these actions in you, I'm noticing that you're quiet, I'm noticing, of course, intimacy is just out the window after having a baby, at least for a few months, to be honest. You just have to regroup. But when you don't have a partner to check in and to see that, you know, something is going on, let's talk about it, or let's get you to a doctor. That's actually frightening. And when you don't feel like you have that safe space to talk about what's possibly going on with your partner, then that creates friction and resentment. And that is something you do not want to allow to build up in a relationship. When you're feeling a certain way, both parties have to express it. Hey, I'm not feeling good about XYZ, or I'm not feeling great about how you spoke to me. I didn't like what you said, or just whatever it may be. Because if it festers and it continues to build up, it's just going to get worse. And that will affect your relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the part that I'm looking at now is, as a man and having a limited emotional vocabulary, those feelings and emotions that you all are talking about are things I've never seen before. So, how do me as a man, this, you know, search or recognize that, because I've never felt like, I've never been given permission to feel like that, to look at feeling abandoned or inadequate or overwhelmed, right? Because I just sucked it up, right? And now, how do I come to someone's aid to help them through a feeling that is foreign to me? I'm listening. Oh,
I know. Did you want to speak on that, Stephanie?
I'm gonna let you take this one first.
Yeah. So when you are feeling, so let me understand your question, Franklin. So what you're saying is when you are feeling as though your partner is expressing some different behaviors or feelings, how are you to handle that?
Yeah, how do I create a safe space how do I come to that to help in something that I don't know what it is, because I've never felt that way before. I've never felt, let me see here.
Because
I can tell anybody, I was weak, right? Mm-hmm. I could never tell anybody I was weak or helpless, right? And in these mm-hmm. moments where you just had a newborn baby, you're feeling weak and helpless, right? Because you're not producing mm-hmm. enough milk, right? So how do I approach you? How can a man approach a woman in that area where she's feeling helpless and weak and insignificant because she's not producing enough milk during a newborn baby? How can I approach her, right? That's the question.
Well, actually, I think, Stephanie, you were talking about that, and you gave a great example of when your husband stepped in and he noticed
I guess your frustration, your angst. And he stepped up and he, you know, went to you and he said, hey, you know, I see some things are going on. What's going on? And is that what you had said earlier about your husband? Because I thought that was a great example.
Right. He did. Because he's like, look, he says, I know that, that is my dog going crazy. But he came and he says, I know that there's a lot of things going on. He was like, I mean, I don't expect you to be the same person right now, but he's like, this is not you. And he's like, look, we need to, if this is causing you this much strife, this much angst, he says, you know, it's not worth it. He's like, because I know you want to be the best person, the best mother, you know, just, I know, he's like, I know you. And mm-hmm. And he really reiterated what I wanted to be as a mother. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is getting in the way of, you know, what you want for our kids, for our family. And he says, it's not worth it. He's like, mm-hmm. it is not worth it for you to be in that angst and for you to go down mm-hmm. those holes.
So I think what was important to your husband, what you're saying is, and correct me if I'm mistaken, that he recognized your greatest needs. And that was being a great mom, of course. But most importantly, you wanted to make sure your baby got the nutrients and the vitamins from you. And that was challenging. And so he saw that and he knew that it was hard for you. And men tend to not sometimes, they don't understand what a mom goes through, what a woman goes through with her body, let alone her children.
Right.
And as a woman, we put our children or our priority. They are our priority from the minute they are conceived to the minute they come to this world. And so it's a good thing that your husband saw that and he stepped up. And so I think to your question, Franklin, you were asking, how could you approach your spouse about something that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that approaching in a comforting, reassuring, and loving way is always the safest place, and allowing them to be vulnerable mm-hmm. and to show. And sometimes it's crying. Sometimes it's yelling and showing frustration. Sometimes it's just, I just need you to hold me. I just mm-hmm. need you to tell me it's okay. I need you to just listen to me. Because a lot of times people aren't asking for answers. They just need to talk. They just mm-hmm. need to talk and feel like they can be present and express how they are feeling. And that just creates such a deep bond for two people. If you just allow each other to just be your genuine selves and you recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that, and the reason why I highlighted that particular scenario is because I want to encourage men who have not been emotionally astute mm-hmm. That to have the courage to go and ask, and like we say, lead in love, because most times
she's going to, you know, to share with you her feelings, and she's not going to ask you to do something that you cannot do. Right?
Right.
Like you were saying, I just need you to tell me I'm beautiful. I just need you to just listen right now. I just need you just to hold me. In those moments, regardless of that you, and in this moment here, you don't have those feelings, you don't have those emotions, but you can see that something's wrong with her, right? She's not smiling, right? And so we're trying to get you back to your best space. And that's what I when those check-ins, what I've created is this questioning of, are you in your best space?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not in your best space, then what can we do to get you to your best space? And chances are that person's going to tell you, I need you to do X, Y, and Z. And you can do it because they're not going to ask you to do something that you cannot do. Or they may just say,
Sometimes they may ask you to do something you are not capable of doing.
Like what?
I don't know. Let's take me to the moon. I don't know. I mean, sometimes a person, especially if you are not someone who is used to being vulnerable. For example, mm-hmm. let's take men, for example, because it's just such a struggle, because men were just taught, you know, you're strong and you're hard and you're tough and you don't cry and you don't whine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's not okay. We know that now, 20th century, that's not okay. So if you have someone who thinks that, you know, if I ask you to just tell me you love me once a month, maybe he can't do that. Maybe he feels, well, you know I love you, but you don't tell me.
So going back to that thing, right? His lips are moving. So he can say, I love you.
Maybe he can't. For whatever reason, maybe he can't. And that's a part of understanding yourself. That's a part of knowing who you are and knowing what you're capable of. That's a part of knowing your challenges and digging deep and finding out what is going on, the things that I need, and then the things that you need, expressing those feelings and emotion and those ideas, because we all need something.
Right.
We all need something. And love is one of them. And you do have people who cannot say those words love. For an example, I just need you to tell me you love me. Well, I show you I love you. For some people, she may not be capable of saying I love you.
And then we ask why. Why can't you say it?
And that's
something. And then they tell you that, go ahead, I'm listening.
No, I was saying that, and that is something, that is one of those deep exploration moments.
Right.
I can't say I love because, you know, when I was a child, you know, my parents never held me, or you know, my dad, you know, beat me and told me I couldn't cry. And, you know, I don't know what love is.
Right.
I think I feel love for you,
mm-hmm.
but I don't understand what love is. So I can't say it.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put on this sticky note. I love you, right? And then when you walk past the refrigerator, I want you to read the sticky note on the refrigerator. No, just read the sticky note on the refrigerator. When you go in there to get some milk or you go get a beer, I want you to read that sticky note loud and say, I love you, right? That's what I need you to say to me. I know your actions show me love. I know you're taking care of me. I got it. I know you're here. And if I called you, you'd be here in a moment, right? But I need to hear those words.
And for you to be able to just go to the refrigerator and say those words out loud is will meet the checkpoint, because you can say I love you. And that's the part what I'm saying. It's still doable. The point that I'm bringing, the reason why I'm bringing this to the table is that relationships are suffering because of the lack of emotional intimacy. And the reason why the emotional intimacy is not there is because those feelings aren't turned on inside of men that we could be assured that there's going to be a positive connection when we share those vulnerable moments. And so because that's what we're missing, we can no longer have an excuse where I don't feel that way, or no one has ever told me they love me, so I can't tell you that I love you. No, you can do it right now. And I want you to practice. You know, right now you can't do 100 push-ups, but you can do 3 right now. And then you keep practicing till you get to 100. Hello?
Yeah.
we're listening to your point.
But
it's a good point.
Yeah, it is. It makes sense.
But that's the point what I'm talking about, because intimacy is a level of commitment. And the commitment is to reciprocity. And again, we go back to these things where, like I say, I highlight those things because these are areas in which I missed, right? Simply because I didn't know that I could turn those feelings and those emotions on because of where I was.
Exactly. And that is something that you had to understand within you. That is something you deal with. And eventually you are able to do those things. You know that now, but that is something that you had to learn, because growing up, you didn't know these things. And you carried it through for many, 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 many years, but it showed up in your relationship. It showed up and it showed out.
Absolutely.
And you learned.
And you learned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And when you know better, you do better. Right?
Yep.
And then when you learn something better than that, then you do that. Right. Anything else? Yeah. You want to share anything else, Stephanie? I know we had an hour and a half, and I know we're not going to Cat Williams time, and I know you got to get back to the kids.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm good. That's back Stephanie, to reality.
Yeah. Back to reality. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for trusting me, and thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing everything.
Yeah, absolutely. When individuals like yourself come on the show to support me, I feel like Arsenio Hall when he came back. No, I'm saying, right? It was Arsenio Hall. He came back the second time, right? And his show was getting ready to go off the air because his numbers weren't up there, right? But then there were those friends who showed up on his show. And I was like, oh my gosh, Jay Leno came, David Letterman was there. And it was like, oh my gosh. And so individuals like you, Stephanie, who I have a 10-year history with, right? Who, like I tell my friends, right? I don't have a certain number of friends. I just have a number of friends I'm certain of, right? And
I love that.
Right. And to reach out to Stephanie and like, hey, can you come on a podcast, share your perspective? You and Chris have been doing great stuff. And for you to be here touches my heart. And I just want to say thank you.
No, thank you. No, I'm really, really happy I could help out.
I appreciate it. I love you, girl. Tell Chris I said hello. And as always, we go out Come on, where are you, baby girl? Ow!
Ow!
Well, you heard it here. Lead with love and follow with understanding. Intimacy is a beautiful thing when two individuals are committed to reciprocity and vulnerability. Be here on Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 a.m. for another episode of Intimate Discovery. I am your host, Jan Franklin, and I'm out of here.
Let's go. They said I wouldn't make it, but I'm here now.
Yep.
Champion.
Hey, if you're in the Charlotte area on June 29th, I want you to join me for a seminar, Becoming a High Reliable Partner. It's going to be at the Allegra Westbrook Regional Library. Go to champfranklinspeaks.com to register. Thank you. Hey, Stephanie.
And I'm here to stay, never go down. 'Cause I'm a champion. A champion.
Thank you all so much.
Champion.
Camp out. Remember, the sky's the limit. Don't stop on the